2 days ago, we talked about humility, and Moshe Rabbeinu as the paradigm, the epitome of humility. Even though he was aware of his talents, he was very attractive and successful, he was an ego, wasn't a malach, he didn't compare himself inappropriately to earlier generations. He saw himself in his own door, apnei adamah. I talked about the source of the seed of his humility, because he saw HaKadosh Baruch Hu so clearly, he was able to frame and contextualize his accomplishments. That's one strategy for humility. It's called Godless Habare. You realize the magnitude of HaKadosh Baruch Hu when you put human accomplishment, however pride or vainglorious you feel about it, you put it into perspective. There's another strategy for humility, and Avos Rav Nosson suggests that Moshe excelled in this strategy as well. It's not called Godless Habare, it's called Shiflas Adam. When you realize how vulnerable and fragile human beings are, and of course you're a human being, you put your own accomplishments into perspective. It could all end in a flash, and everything is hanging by a hairbreadth. So this is the language of Avos Rav Nosson. Gimel mine mukashkin nivru ba'olam. There are three types of venereal epidermal diseases that affect the human being's skin, probably are sexually affiliated, the types of diseases which make us feel very uncomfortable to be in their presence because they're contagious and because they're so visible to other human beings. It's called mukashkin. The Gemara in Ksuvos talks about a woman who wants to divorce herself, wants to initiate a divorce process from her husband because her husband's a mukashkin. So it's a classic type of shkin. That's why in Mitzrayim it was so mortifying to be afflicted with shkin, because it was public, they had to be quarantined, lo yechal lamod b'nei Moshe. It was ugly, it was infected, it was contagious, it also had a sexual component to it. So the three types of mukashkin. Don't ask me to define what each one is. But the language is, one is Yatlach, Yavesh, and Baal Polifos. One is a very dry and scaly type of disease. One is very wet and pus-filled, and one is Baal Polifos. I don't know what Baal Polifos is. But in any case, V'haysan nafshon shel Moshe nemucha mikulam. Moshe Rabbeinu saw himself as inferior to all those types of people. Those people would feel very uncomfortable in public. If you're walking around with one of these diseases, you'd feel very awkward. You'd feel very subpar. Moshe was able to see himself, even though he wasn't afflicted with these illnesses, because he was in touch with human fragility and the delicacy of the human condition. That's why it's so important in life, especially if Hashem gives you success, to try to get exposure as much as you can to people who have less than you. And the more they suffer, I don't like to use that word because it sounds like you're using their suffering as a personal tool, but inevitably people will suffer in this world. The more that you're able to go to hospitals and see elderly people who are ill, people that have special medical needs and other types of special needs, the more you're able to realize how fragile it all is, and to be on the one hand grateful and have a karas hatov for what Hashem does give you, but equally important, to be able to generate humility. And as I said before, the humility is not just internal by realizing how fragile and vulnerable human experience is, but also social. When you have these types of afflictions and other types of weaknesses as a human being, you're a little less comfortable in your society. You feel as if eyes are on you, and you're a little less confident, certainly less swagger external. And therefore you're muted. Even if the humility is an internal and existential, at least your behavior. There are two types of humility. There's behavioral humility and attitudinal humility. Obviously we want to try to achieve attitudinal humility, where you see yourself in humble terms. But even if you can't yet achieve attitudinal humility, you still want to try to achieve behavioral humility, where you act in ways that aren't grandiose and flamboyant and directing attention to yourself and self-centric. So even if you can't reach the internal sentiment, at least you can try to shape your behavior. And when you have these diseases, or when you come into contact with people that do, or other weaknesses that you experience as a human being, weakness in life and failure is a very important moment in human experience in general. Some people, when they fail or their weaknesses are exposed, they get frustrated and they get angry and other types of negative or self-destructive behavior. But weakness and failure is a very important moment, not just religiously, developmentally. How do you recover from weakness and failure? How do you exhibit resurgence? And how do you maintain persistence and tenacity? But certainly from a religious standpoint, the moments that you're weak, even if you don't have these extreme conditions, is a moment to reflect and inflect upon what it is to be a human being and to put your accomplishments and talents into perspective and to gauge or to guard against unnecessary egotism. Now, what makes this so fascinating is that Moshe was able to reflect upon this while his brother and sister had these conditions, because basically these are forms of tzaras. Moshe Rabbeinu was able to identify, or the Torah at least is talking about his humility, juxtaposed to their tzaras. Moshe Rabbeinu presumably thought about this every day of his life, or from time to time, but the Torah is saying, well, they actually had tzaras because of their Lashon Hara. Moshe Rabbeinu was able, without tzaras, to identify human weakness, even fragility, on a daily basis. And it reminds us that one of the consequences of tzaras is to try to somehow reduce some of this arrogance that may have led to Lashon Hara. What are the two reasons that people say Lashon Hara? Why are people slanderous? Why do they say negative things? So generally, obviously there are many reasons, but generally Lashon Hara can be reduced to two different conditions. One condition is just gossip. You're not arrogant, you're not condescending, you don't hold yourself higher than other people, you just like gossiping. Life is boring, just to talk about ideas all day, another Tosfos, and another book, and another concept. What did so-and-so do to such-and-such? Today on the internet, there are entire sites dedicated to gossip. We've created a culture of gossip, television programs about gossip, to say stupid, silly, meaningless things about meaningless people, but just because it's interesting, because it breaks the monotony in our life, because we want to be social. What are we going to talk about? Heavy-handed things? We're sitting around, let's just talk about something that's light and easy, salacious and interesting. And Saras, to a degree, also tries to address that. The Gemara in Erechin says, why does a Mitzara offer two birds in the end of his Saras? The Gemara says, because birds chirp. So this person was guilty of chirping. So the birds are meant to hopefully teach him a lesson or two about chirping mindlessly. There's nothing really dastardly or menacing about that type of Saras. It's just falling into situations where that's what we talk about Shabbos afternoon at the lunch table. Who did what to whom in shul, and who's suffering financial difficulties, and who's having marital difficulties, and just because it's an interesting conversation. The more toxic and subversive form of Lashon Hara is where you actually say something negative about another person because you've judged that person to be faulty, and part of that judgmentalism is because you're coming from a high perch where you're the judge and you're better and you're superior. If you put yourself into context and say, well, maybe I'm not judging correctly, maybe I don't know that person's full behavior, or even if I do identify flawed behavior in that person, I've got my own fair share of flaws, and if I'm not going to hold myself so superior to that individual, it's at the heart of every subversive Lashon Hara is a sense of arrogance and self-worth. And according to this, this is between the lines of this matter, when a person receives tzaras, it's a wake-up call, not just to avoid Lashon Hara, but to reflect upon the human condition, the fragility and the delicacy of the human condition, and hopefully to remodulate the behavior in general, not just with gossip and Lashon Hara, towards greater humility. So try to think about two things in today's year. Number one, it's sometimes hard in early stages of your life to really have attitudinal humility. But at least try to be someone that behaves in a humble fashion. And don't worry about being a hypocrite because I don't feel that. As long as you're sincere and you're trying to be a humble person, even if you hold yourself in high esteem, at least you don't want to act that way. Not in a duplicitous fashion, but in a way that hopefully if I behave long enough in a way that's humble, some of it will rub off on myself. You talk about traits that rub off on other people or other people's traits that rub off on you. If you behave in a certain way, it's likely that trait will be internalized. And the two strategies to try to build humility is number one, to try to think about Kadosh Baruch Hu's godless and put your perspectives or put your accomplishments into perspective, which is why it's always good to be with great people. Because even if you can't understand Hashem's greatness, when you meet great people, you'll say, well, everything I've done is a little bit, let me just put it into perspective. I think for a lot of boys, when you come to yeshiva, that's very helpful. When you're very successful in high school, because the scale of accomplishments in them is a little bit limited, you come to yeshiva. In general, when you come to great contexts and see people that are very heroic and sacrificing for their ideals, all of a sudden you're able to see things a little bit differently. That's number one. Number two, have a healthy sense, not morbid, not constantly worrying about human failure, but a healthy sense of how vulnerable human experience is. When you're young, it's hard, because when you're young, you feel invulnerable and invincible, and you always hear your parents and your teachers, be careful when you go in the deal, don't get too near the edge, don't do anything crazy. and you want to do crazy things, and the difference between it is not just that you're less responsible, so when you get older, you realize how delicate life is and how much it has to be protected. When you're younger, Baruch Hashem, you don't have that sense, and that's not the way you should be. You should feel that life has unlimited opportunities. It's only from time to time to be able, I think sometimes I see people in life that are very, very arrogant and very cocky. And I've heard people use this phrase before, and I'll use that phrase as well. Say, that person has never fallen. That person needs to fall. Because that person has a fictitious or inaccurate sense of human experience. Sometimes as a parent, as a teacher as well, you have to let people fall. You have to let people fail. Because if they don't fail, not only will they not develop rehabilitative skills, but they won't understand the life. Sometimes people get too much and they're too spoiled and people are always there to help them and cover up their messes and solve their problems for them. And then you just think that life is more more invincible than it really is, and that can lead not just to the lack of ability to show tenacity and persistence and resurgence and resilience, but also to cockiness and arrogance, because you feel the whole world owes you a favor. Yeah. Life has everything, coming to you, rather than realizing that life is a series of triumphs and failures. Okay, tomorrow is Rashi up on the porch. Okay?